Okay, ready? Everybody settle and action.
Warning, Critique Revolve contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended,
you're one ugly motherfucker. Go ahead. Make my day.
Well, that's great. That's just fucking great, man.
It rubs the lotion on its skin. It doesn't even have any
control. I'm mostly coming out. Most of all.
There are
certain
rules.
Short round.
Together for a quarter of a century, and the first show he writes with someone else is gonna be the biggest hit he ever had. Am I bitter,
Larry?
Yes.
For over 20 years, Hart and his partner Richard Rodgers created a string of hits.
I want 10 copies of that.
Write me a check.
Such as My Funny Valentine, The Lady is a Tramp, and Blue Moon.
Your work is brilliant. That's not the problem.
No, I'm not drinking with you, Larry.
All right. Hello. Welcome, everyone, to Critique Revolve. We're going to be taking a look at Richard Linklater's Blue Moon, which is his first film of 2025. And yes, his first film. We'll get to that in a second. Starring Ethan Hawke as lyricist Lawrence Hart, one half of the legendary songwriting duo Rodgers and Hart. Written by Robert Kaplow, the film unfolds over a single night in 1943 as Hart confronts the decline of his career and his deteriorating health on the eve of Oklahoma's Broadway premiere, the show that would signal the rise of Rodgers' new partnership and Hart's final separation from his longtime collaborator. Okay, so along with Hawke, the film stars Andrew Scott, Margaret Qualley, Bobby Cannavale. Did I say that right, Dave?
Yes, Cannavale.
Are you part Italian? Let's pretend you are. And Jonah Lees. The cast is outstanding, Dave.
Oh, it is. It is. Especially, you know, like, I was really pleasantly surprised when I was watching this and I didn't pay attention to the cast because all I went in was saying it's an Ethan Hawke film.
That's all we knew. We went in blind on purpose.
Yeah. And like, as the cast started unwinding, I'm like, oh my God, this is a really good cast.
Yeah. Well, Ethan Hawke delivers a deeply internalized performance that's really at the heart. That's really what makes the movie work. That's the heart of this film. You know, portraying Hart not as a tragic figure of legend, but as a man suspended between wit, weariness, performance, and sincerity. Doesn't that characterize and capture his performance?
Oh yeah, especially with the opening line of I think it was from actual Rodgers, who called Hart the saddest man in the world. Okay, this is what we're going to be set up for. And sure enough, you would think that this would be a really sad film, but by the end of it, I felt really uplifted by this film. It was actually a really cool film to actually walk away from.
I think what uplifted you, David, I think you're getting your wires crossed. I think why you were so uplifted was because, did I just watch a good film from beginning to end in all categories? Well, did it check every single good film box?
Exactly.
I think that's why you were uplifted, David. It gave you hope in cinema.
Yes. Yes. And that's what this film does. It gives me hope in cinema.
Yeah. Because when Ethan Hawke starts talking to his writing buddy, I don't want to say who it is. It's just too many spoilers, but people will be like, I think that's David and Mike talking about movies.
It is.
Yeah.
I texted you and I said, this sounds like us, doesn't it? Who's Hart?
Crotchety old men. Yeah, we're in our mid 40s going on 70.
Exactly. It was like, I was, especially with the character of Hart is someone that, for me personally, I gravitate towards.
Yeah. Well, all of us do on this network.
Like, exactly.
Yeah.
I even saw, like, I was like, I wanted to text Thomas and say, I found your, you know, your avatar.
I did. I posted it in our movie group chat. And I said, Thomas, you are going to definitely want to watch this movie because it's as crotchety as you are. Yeah. So Ethan Hawke, let's get back to his performance here. So there is this honing of all of his acting talents.
Yes.
Being brought to bear when it comes to this performance. His physical and vocal work suggest a personality in constant flux, consumed by restlessness. And it's a complicated performance to unpack, as it should be, because the film's emotional rhythm depends entirely on Hart's unstable center. And Hawke's performance, and I would even say thespian playfulness, becomes the film's pulse.
Yes.
It's mirroring Hart's oscillation between brilliance and, I guess you can say, collapse. So this movie is driven by performance. That's probably the best way to characterize this film. Linklater's direction is delicate and seemingly hands-off, as, of course, we know it wasn't. But he has an invisible style, which lets the acting breathe in this particular film. Mm-hmm. There's no attempt to overstate the moment or draw attention to the frame. Instead, his unobtrusive approach actually allows performance to take center stage. And in doing so, creates a naturalism that feels observed rather than staged. Doesn't it feel like, David, that we're behind the glass? I'm not talking like the usual experience of watching movies where we're removed by the screen. It feels like this movie was designed to be watched and observed carefully.
Yes.
For performance.
In a lot of ways, this film is an actor's film.
Yeah.
Like, if you were to put a professional actor, sit them in front of this film, I would, you know, bet money that majority of actors out there would love what this film, how this film was portrayed.
Yeah. Put together, right?
They would love to be in a film like this. And that's what Linklater, I give him massive props, because it does feel like he's completely hands off. Like, as a director, it feels like it, but that's how you can tell good direction.
Right, David? Because we are, and I'm not against stylized filmmaking. In fact, we grew up in the era of the video brats. Tarantino, mm-hmm. Robert Rodriguez, Kevin Smith, they're all about style. But when you give us a movie like this, there's something to be also said about the invisible style. Mm-hmm. This feeling that we get that there is no director, that we're just dropped or seemingly dropped off for a few hours, and we're watching people converse.
We're watching life happen in front of us.
We're the nosy people across, you know, in restaurants, you have those people who listen to other people's conversations.
Eavesdroppers. Yeah,
we're the eavesdroppers. That's what it feels like. We're eavesdropping in, but also at the same time, we don't need to feel guilty that we're eavesdropping, because Hart wants us to listen.
Yeah.
He wants as many people as possible to listen to him.
And that's one of the core concepts and ideas of this film that I really loved, is like the idea that we're listening to Hart, because at the end of the day, to me, and I know that a lot of people feel that are calling this a romance film, right? It's a romance film. It's a dark romance film. But the thing is, one of the core concepts I liked is the idea that in order to love someone, you have to listen to them, truly listen to them. And I thought that was brilliantly done by Linklater with the help of Ethan Hawke's performance.
That's an interesting interpretation, Dave. I didn't really pick up on that, dealing with the romance side of it.
It didn't hit me till, and without giving any spoilers, the scene between Elizabeth and Hart in the closet. and hearing their dialogue play out. And that's when it actually truly hit me, is like, here's these two people. And at the core of it is just Hart wanting Elizabeth to actually hear him, to listen to him. And likewise, Elizabeth just wants to talk to Hart. He listens. He actually speaks with her. It's communication.
Yeah. And interestingly, I think the one-sidedness of the relationship, you know, and I'm going to leave it at that.
Yes.
There's more to it than
there's
that.
There's more to it.
But you are right. There is something to be said there. That is a parallel story supplementing and or supporting the main story itself, which is about Hart's own need for validation at the end of his career.
Mm-hmm.
So, Dave, since you're on a roll here, tell me your overall thoughts in a nutshell before we move into the rest.
My overall thoughts on this movie is this is the most surprising film I have ever been blessed to actually watch. Because let's make no mistakes, anyone who listens to our shows on Critique Revolve, I have been a major curmudgeon.
That's going to be on the poster.
Yeah.
I felt completely blessed while watching this movie. David Sabal, Rayman Digital.
Exactly. As anyone who listens to our shows actually knows, I've been a curmudgeon with film in general for the past couple years. Like, every time we cover the Academy Awards, I'm not as negative as Thomas, but I'm getting there because I keep saying
there's a lot of head scratching.
Yeah, there's a lot of head scratching, and it's kind of like nothing in film really inspires me. I get to this and I'm like going, my God, I want to study the dialogue. I want to study the performances. I want to study the directing.
Yeah.
And it's a film like this that makes me excited. Because it's kind of like, I believe in film again.
Yeah. I will say this, David. I don't disagree. Maybe the blessed part. I don't know if I felt blessed while watching this movie. I will say most of Hawk's work is incredibly underrated. He is seldom given credit or accolades for his work. But this movie, David, might be the film that finally and resoundingly cements Hawk's work with some of the greats. This is the movie. If he doesn't get nominated, and I know we're jumping the gun here.
Yeah.
But we are approaching Oscar season. I mean, this is when the films, right? The award films start to be released.
Yes.
Now, interestingly, David, Richard Linklater actually has two films planned to be released this year. He has another film coming out in just a few weeks that celebrates the French New Wave. It's titled Nouvelle Vague, I believe is how you pronounce that. I probably pronounce that less like a Frenchman and more like a Klingon. a comedy drama film that follows the shooting of Breathless, which is a great French New Wave film. One of the first feature films of the era of the French cinema in 1959. So as the first of two companion films, Blue Moon, it's going to be followed later this year by Nouvelle Vague, and Blue Moon begins Linklater's dual exploration of artistic cycles, one tracing the end of inspiration and the other the birth of a new cinematic movement altogether. They frame a meditation on creation, decay, and the fragile intervals between them. At least according to some interviews that I was reading this morning about Linklater and his two films. It's an interesting approach to exploring these types of avenues when it comes to artistic creation and the artist himself. It's going to be interesting to see how both films are actually received, because based on just what I've read and of course watching Blue Moon, two very different movies.
Very, very. I mean, like, I haven't seen a lot on Nouvelle Vague yet, but I've heard enough to know that the film honestly sounds like the type of film you would expect in art houses, indie films, not like in like major theaters type crowds. So it is a very interesting choice that he made, because like I see just as you were alluding to, Blue Moon can easily be digested cinematically by mass audiences, where it's like, yeah, I could see people going out and seeing this film on a regular basis, but then he comes out with Nouvelle Vague, which, be honest, I don't think, like, people that, like me and you, are going to see the film, but Joe Schmo is not going to know anything about it. So to actually, the strategy of Linklater to kind of make the two films kind of bookend each other creatively, I think is a really interesting choice. Yeah. I just don't think it's going to work.
Well, I don't know if he was looking to turn these into like some box office, you know, double features that double were just going to blow the doors off. I think this is just more of an artistic expression.
And if you think about Linklater's filmography, kind of proves that, where it's kind of like,
he's all over the map in terms of genre and tone and what he's trying to say. He does delve into a lot of philosophical thought in more of his serious films, but then he has very out there. I mean, the movie that started his career, Dazed and Confused, which is a good movie for his time.
It is.
And for what type of movie it was and what it wanted to be, it was a successful film. But bringing us back to this particular film, Blue Moon, Dave, one of the reasons I'm hailing the writing, directing, and acting together is that though it's not a musical in the conventional sense, the rhythms, I don't know if you picked up on this, the rhythms of Hart's language, the way Ethan Hawke emotes, the way he speaks, the fragments of his songs and the shifting tone between charm, it drives the tempo.
Yes.
It's very musical in its approach. So you have this synergistic power of these three components effectively stripping away artifice with the directing, the writing, the acting, and what you get is something raw and immediate.
Yes.
That is what I was attempting to say about feeling that we're just behind the glass, that we are the eavesdropping restaurant goer, where the performance becomes the vehicle for revealing the truth, you know, the fractured interior rather than merely representing it.
We're getting in personal with Hart, especially like for me, the dialogue between him and Rogers is the one that hit me the most in that regard, like what you're saying, where you're, I think the term for me that I would use is like the fly on the wall. We're sitting there watching these two characters talk, and it's a very personal discussion.
It's too personal at times.
And it is. Yeah. Especially toward the end of their conversation, because it's obvious that the breakup between Hart and Rogers affects Hart a lot. And it's interesting to me watching that dialogue play out, because normally in like a film, you would have this overblown kind of vibe when it comes to two former, let's say former associates working, being forced to work together again. And you'd have that quote unquote conflict synergy happen. But here with this bit of dialogue that they do together, it feels more natural. It feels like this is what a real relationship would feel like.
Yeah, there's tolerance, there's resentment, there's love.
Yeah.
There's empathy, but there's also anger. Like there's so many emotions that passes through the two of them. And not just the two of them, these types of things are great ways to explain many of the performance throughout the film. Mm-hmm. But that specific scene you're talking about is one of the best scenes in the movie. It really is, because it pushes the limits of our own comfort. We feel at times that because we like Hart's way of talking and we're listening to him, and then to see him kind of lose a little bit of his dignity.
Yes.
As he speaks to Elizabeth as well as Rogers, you kind of feel like we shouldn't be privy to this part.
Yeah, because it's almost like we're seeing someone's very private and private moments or private ideas come out.
How many times do we have very private conversations with our friends or loved yes. ones? And talking at that moment with your friend, you don't think nothing of it. But if you were to, if someone were to say, hey, we recorded that whole conversation on video.
Holy shit.
You would be like, well, I didn't say anything offensive. I didn't say anything that I wouldn't want people necessarily to know. But what I said was, I was a little vulnerable. I don't know if I want people to see that type of vulnerability.
There you go. That's the word. That's the word I think is missing a lot in when I watch films that deal with, let's put them in air quotes, relationships, right? A lot of times it's missing that vulnerability that you're talking about, where it's like the vulnerability may be uncomfortable, but that's authentic to human nature. If you write a bit of dialogue and it just seems like two people talking and there's nothing, that's not real. There's nothing authentic about that. But here with the dialogue that Hart has with all the characters around the movie, you feel like you're becoming Hart. You know what I mean? You're getting a chance to feel what he's feeling in his shoes. And it's uncomfortable because no one wants to actually pry into a person's private thoughts sometimes.
Yeah. And I think the reason why we're really focusing on the acting, because obviously the directing has a major part to play in this. The thing that was very refreshing about this film and its acting is nowadays when you hear people talk about great acting in a movie, it is so far out of normal behavior that it's hard not to admire someone's downward spiral into psychosis.
Yes.
You know, and of course, I'm thinking of Joaquin Phoenix right now. Joaquin Phoenix is a great actor, but bad guy roles are quirky. They demand lunacy, menace, and you have a lot more to work with. And I'm not saying anything about those performances. Those performances are great. But I always go back to my Bryan Cranston quote. When he was asked about his performance as Walter White and how great it was, he said, you know what? He's on my humble opinion. Bad guy roles are easy.
Yes. Yeah.
Give me a straight role. That's where talent lies. And that's what I'm talking about when it comes to Ethan Hawke's performance. It's a straight role. There's no quirk other than personality traits. He doesn't have odd fetishes, because every weird performance nowadays that people praise, the actor has some weird fetish. He plays with something in his hands constantly, or he has some neurodivergent type of behavioral patterns.
Yeah.
This is just a guy acting like a normal person.
Yeah.
Talking, and these types of roles go under the radar nowadays. And I'm hoping that the right people watch this, the people over at the award shows, right?
Yes.
And they say, this is what's been missing. Because in my opinion, this movie is the first I've seen this year that gets everything right. Acting, directing, writing. There might be better movies, but not where all three, directing, writing, and acting, work succinctly together in this way. And in many ways, the movie feels, and this is the point I'm trying to get to, David, like a moment or even a single scene pulled straight out of an old Hollywood film.
Yes.
Old Hollywood. Remember those days? The old Hollywood studio pictures?
Yeah.
It feels like this scene was pulled from one of those films and they just fully fleshed it out. It has that heightened intimacy, the theatricality that you'd find in those classic studio dramas.
Yes.
But Linklater stretches it out into something more reflective, more lived in, as if he's expanding a fleeting cinematic moment into an entire night of reckoning.
Well, the thing I loved about that, that's why I like the play of certain lines in the film that focus in on Hart's obsession with the movie Casablanca.
There you go.
And it's like, I was like cracking up because like the dialogue that Ethan Hawke performs is so, and it's so intelligent when you actually look at it and actually listen to it and see like the different meanings that's basically being said by tying in, just like you said, those old movies, because it does feel like one of those old this film feels like an old 1950s film from Casablanca.
Old Hollywood.
However, it has a modern twist to it where there's a bit more substance in everything. You know, it's not as...
That's why I was saying, it's like Linklater, you know, was watching some old Hollywood films. He's like, you know what? This would be a great scene if we put a little bit of contemporary film form into it. Let's see about doing that. And it seems like that's what he did. He took something he liked and he fleshed it out and imbued it with modernity.
Well, here's the funny part is like you brought up the fact that how it may seem strange to people listening to Ethan Hawke's dialogue and see like a certain melody to it. But again, it is playing around with that old style of film, especially in the musicals, where you feel like Art's talking about something and then he's going to break out into song and dance.
Yeah.
But he doesn't. Instead, he talks about something and Linklater makes the moment breathe so that you can actually understand what Hart is actually saying.
And you know what, David, this movie, the reason why it is so well done goes to show you sometimes you want greatness. It takes time. According to a recent interview, Ethan Hawke, as well as Linklater, they've been waiting 12 years to make this movie. He says in an interview, I believe it was Denzel that said it to me when I lost, I'm assuming the Oscar nomination that he lost or the Oscar win. Mm-hmm. Hawk tells the Variety Awards Circuit podcast, he says, don't worry, you don't want to win it yet. It'll mean so much more. You've got a lot of good work to do.
Yes.
So the advice proved to be correct. In Richard Linklater's biopic, Blue Moon, Hawk delivers one of the richest, according to this article, most emotionally driven performances in his career. The role required 12 years of patience, specifically Linklater's patience, as he waited for his longtime collaborator to age into the part.
Yes, because like that, and that's the thing, Linklater and Hawk have worked extensively in the past. I mean, they did the Before trilogy.
Yes,
which
that's right.
Is amazing when you watch it.
I forgot about those movies.
Oh, the Before trilogy?
Right.
Is an actually great, great film.
Because those are dialogue driven as well.
Those are heavily dialogue driven. And when you watch how Linklater and Hawke work together, this is the, I honestly feel everyone basically says, oh, the Before trilogy was amazing, but this is the magnum opus. This is like the director and actor working together and creating this film that takes more than just simply saying action.
Yeah. There's a lot of thought and a lot of heart and passion and patience that went into this movie. So,
oh, yeah.
So apparently, over a decade, Hawke and Linklater met periodically to read the script, refine it with the screenwriter, Robert Kaplow. So all three have been involved with this movie for over 10 years.
People throw around the terms, this is a passion project. No, this is the definition
of a passion project.
And
you know what, David? Sometimes passion projects veer dangerously close or actually fall into self-indulgence.
Yeah. But
this doesn't
because like you have a director who knows his craft. You have an actor who is regarded as one of the most underrated actors in our generation. And he knows his craft. So you have, and then you have a, I'm sorry, I forgot the screenwriter's name, but Caplow, who also, he's no slouch either. So it's kind of like you have these three, let's call them auteurs, working together, knowing that basically this is what we have, what has to be done for film in order to get their image or their vision across in the screen. Sometimes you have to take time. And I think that that's a lost idea if for people out there who call themselves filmmakers, where it's kind of like everyone feels we live in a generation where it's like everything has to happen now. You need to stream everything. You need to put everything up. Let's get views. Let's get likes, everything. You know, the YouTube generation of filmmakers.
Yeah. They really went the distance with this movie. Ethan Hawke even said that he'll never do a role like this again. he shaved his head. The whole idea of him having to be a whole foot shorter than Elizabeth, Margaret Qualley's character, was obviously tiresome and time consuming to get it right.
But it was so worth it, though.
Yeah, but he said he won't do this again. He said he won't do this to his body ever again, and that this will probably be the last film he'll do this type of thing for. And I'm like, no, man. Like, I think he's gonna get nominated. He might even win his first Oscar for this performance. So please, well, let's keep him coming.
Put your pain. Take the pain.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Come on.
And like.
Die for your craft.
This is, but yeah, as funny as it sounds, we don't see performances like this very often. I mean, you throw around names like Joaquin Phoenix and Christian Bale. Heck,
DiCaprio.
Even DiCaprio.
I'm sorry. I'm going to say it. This role, this performance is better than anything DiCaprio has done. It's better than anything DiCaprio has done. And Leonardo DiCaprio is a great actor, but he has fallen into that trend of quirky characters.
Yes.
And I don't feel like those, I'm not an actor, so I'm not trying to insult people, but I have studied the craft. I understand film. Those become crutches.
Yes.
Quite literally become crutches. And Ethan Hawke, I mean, other than him having to grow into the role and become Lawrence Hart, it didn't have the quirk, you know?
This type of performance goes up there with, say, an actor like Daniel Day-Lewis.
This is like a Glengarry Glen Ross type of performance. They're straight performances in a straightforward film. We don't get a lot of those.
Not anymore, because just like what you said, most of the films and most of the movies that are written nowadays live and die by this hyperbolic, spastic, quirky characterisms that have to have for every character. Otherwise, people say, well, they're not unique enough.
Yeah. I followed Hawke's career, as I was saying at the top of the show, for a long time, but it wasn't until after watching, and this is also a long time ago, so it might clue people in it as to how old I actually am, but it wasn't until after watching the Assault on Precinct 13 remake that I took notice of Hawke's abilities as an actor. If you remember, there's an opening 10-minute sequence where Hawke, I believe, he's playing this police officer who's undercover and he's a heroin addict. And I was blown away. No one talks about it because the movie itself is okay, especially since it's a remake of a John Carter great. And a lot of people were not having any of that. But the performance is fantastic. Yeah, so getting back to this film, it's the kind of work that seems destined for awards recognition, not because of its showiness, but because of its precision. And Ethan locates truth. And this is pretty much what we've been saying. I'm going to boil it all down. Ethan Hawke locates truth in mannerisms and phrasing rather than grand displays of emotion. And I'll add quirk.
Yeah. But the thing also about, the thing I love about Ethan Hawke, especially particularly after witnessing this film, really encapsulates why in the past I've always felt Ethan Hawke is arguably top five, my favorite actors of all time. Because when you look at the films he's done, they're very understated. I mean, just recently before Blue Moon, you had him do a horror film in The Black Phone. And then like you have him playing characters like that, that go underappreciated. But then when people see these projects, they're like going, oh my God, Ethan Hawke is amazing.
Yeah. His range is vast.
Is vast.
Yeah. And when it comes to Richard Linklater, his films, he has such an extensive body of work, and it's so hard to say whether or not he's one of the greats. I think that question can only be answered in a much longer podcast.
Oh yeah.
Episode, but he's been working since 1985. He got big off Dazed and Confused in 1993.
Yes.
Before Sunrise, The Newton Boys, School of Rock, Bad News Bears, A Scanner Darkly, and I'm skipping five or six movies in between the movies I'm actually naming. Me and Orson Welles, Boyhood, Last Flag Flying, Hitman, which just came out, starring Glenn Powell. This guy's body of work is all over the place. I have watched probably 85% of his films. I will, you know what? I will confidently say this might be, if not his best, one of his best films. This is going to be the movie that people look back on and say, this was a great film.
Yes. I 100% agree with you. That's the thing that really cracks me up is like, you look at both Ethan Hawke and Linklater's filmography, it's amazing how underrated a lot of their films have been seen by mass audiences, but mass audiences don't put two and two together and say, oh my God, that's so-and-so from, you know, like that from a certain film. Like, it amazes me to this day when Ethan Hawke gets brought up, a lot of people forget the very beginnings, you know, Dead Poets Society. You have Training Day. I mean, yeah, Training Day was all Denzel, but Ethan Hawke was there too.
I think he was overshadowed.
Oh, by absolutely, Denzel, by Denzel.
But he played his part very well.
Very well. He played the perfect foil to Denzel's. You know, because Denzel's character was bombastic, and like, but when you actually look at both of them together, it's like, I'm like, this is a perfect, you know, everyone constantly talks about old Hollywood where you have the director and their actor, right? I honestly think Linklater and Hawke should be like considered together because their filmography fits and the films
they're definitely longtime collaborators.
Yeah. And it's like, you don't see that very often nowadays.
Yeah. David, I mean, we've said it all pretty much about this film. I don't want to talk too much about the plot because I want people to go see this movie. Yeah, I want people to see this film and enjoy it. It's a very human story. You know, someone trying to reconcile his career, his love, his friendship, everything at the end of his life. It's a fantastic film. It is my favorite film of 2025, and I feel it's the best film of 2025 so far because it gets everything right. It doesn't just do great in one thing. It gets it all right. The script is one of the best scripts. The directing, as we have discussed, just the invisible, seamless, invisible hand of Linklater's work as he's shaping the story. Ethan Hawke's performance, one of his best. And no doubt he'll be nominated for an Oscar. I'm going to give this movie a 95%.
I am actually going to be furious at you.
You're going to give it more?
Yeah, I'm going to give it more.
Yeah.
Because obviously, yeah, I agree with you. This is my favorite movie of the year. This is the best movie I've seen this year. And that's not saying like, oh, David's once again saying like there's nothing good out there.
Yeah, but to watch. You have people, David, to your point, you have people claiming that Sinners is the best movie of the year.
Yeah. Why do I see like the aura just building?
Place that movie side by side. Blue Moon.
No. Yes.
Please.
Please. Please. No. And like, and that's not saying that Sinners is a bad film.
No, but it's not, but groundbreaking. It's not
groundbreaking. This, by far, is a film that I will gladly see in the theaters multiple times. I will gladly go out and buy a copy of it to add it to my collection. I will gladly find the script so I can actually study the dialogue just to actually learn snippets of how to write dialogue. This to me is 100. I know in the network, people always say, oh, David's the one that gives out free hundreds.
I'm not going to get mad. I almost gave it a 98%, but I figured, you know what?
You tried to do the diplomatic thing.
Taper my excitement just a bit. But I don't disagree. I would find it hard for anyone who understands movies to think this movie doesn't belong and then somewhere within the 90%
within
category.
The 90% category. Absolutely. But just for me, this is a film that I would gladly tell people, yeah, go check out. Check it out. It might not be your thing, but I guarantee you it'll be a movie that'll stick with you.
And also it pulls you in.
That's the thing.
I didn't look at my phone. Not even once during the movie. I didn't look at the running time, except once when I felt like it was halfway through because I take notes when it comes to the writing, yeah. Like where the act structures begin and end. But that was purely for practical reasons, not because I was growing wearisome and bored. This movie is a great film, and I am predicting that it will do very well during the award season.
I will be absolutely furious if Blue Moon is snubbed.
If Sinners is nominated as Best Picture and this is not, we're going to have some problems.
We're going to have some problems.
I just laugh. I shouldn't be picking on Sinners, but David, I just see all these people pounding their chest that, you know, Sinners is the best movie. It's so creative and fresh.
Is like, it?
What? Have you guys never watched a vampire movie before? Not only does it, you know, what are we reviewing Sinners now? But not only does Sinners literally take every vampire movie they've ever seen and take a piece of it to put it in their movie, but they get all of the lore wrong.
Yes. And but that's the thing too, is like everyone declares Sinners as unique. You want a unique film. This is a unique film. Blue Moon is a unique film.
And also, just to break it to you, cultural appropriation and racism isn't innovative. We've seen stories about that time and time again.
Stories.
Guess what? KKK, bad guys. Okay, cool. What else you got?
What else you got?
Do you got any crotchety old men that talk about writing? I'm in for that one.
Talk about writing and basically impotence. Yeah. And impotence. Oklahoma with an exclamation point.
Dude, I could not stop laughing. Dude, how many times have we mocked the titles of movies?
Well, dude,
I mean, exclamation points are hacky. And unless you're writing a spaghetti western, you don't need to have any type of punctuation in your title.
Yes. But the beautiful thing about the intelligence behind that, to me, and this is how I read the joke because it constantly was showing up. was the joke about Oklahoma and the fact that Hart hates it. He hates it is because it's similar to like how we as filmmakers look at films nowadays.
His Oklahoma is our sinners.
Is our sinners. Yeah, exactly. Think about it, Mike. Think about
all
the
sinners need to do is put an exclamation point at the end.
Technically,
sinners.
Sinners.
Yeah. Okay, we need to end this discussion. I want to thank everyone for listening. Thank you, David.
Thank you.
Well, very nice to meet you. I'd like to know about sex change operations.
I see.
Cut. No good for sound.
Well, fucking hell, Lloyd.
Man, game over, man. It's game over. What the fuck are we going to do now? What are we going to do?
Where we're going, we don't need roads.
I'll be back.